Welcome to Yolitix, the home of cold beer and hot takes on Texas politics.
All right, it is another week here on Yolitix, and we got a really interesting topic today, but before we dive in...
Why are you talking so slow, man? You're like, all right, it's another right. interesting week, man. Are you setting everyone up for this podcast?
I guess maybe I am. Maybe I'm a little mellow today. Maybe I'm laid back. yeah, I don't know. And maybe that's behind my choice of beers today,
oh,
too.
Oh, are we drinking the same one?
Oh, I doubt that. No, I'm guessing you've got something that's got cannabis attachment. Is that right?
What do you have?
No, tell me what you have first.
All right, I'm going to go with mine. This is Stash.
Ah, yes. IPA. The Stash IPA.
And I looked this up. So let me tell you about this one real briefly. This is from Independence Brewing Company in Austin. It is the... Sorry, I almost had a mess here. I'm going to make a mess here. It is the Chronic of IPAs, the Enlightening... This is off their website. The Chronic of IPAs, the Enlightening Hop Trip. You wish... I can't even read this, man.
Do we need to start over here? You only had two sips.
Are we recording it?
I hope you are.
This is the Chronic of IPAs, the Enlightening Hop Trip you'll wish would never end. Stash's simple malt bill is the canvas upon which the kaleidoscope array of six hop profiles grew. Da 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 da.
You would be a terrible pitch man, by the way.
Yeah, it's
terrible
it's good
pitch
beer.
Man.
I don't do a lot of IPAs, but it's good beer and it's apropos for our topic. What are you having, man?
It is. I'm not nearly as on topic. I did see that one, but then I saw those three letters IPA underneath it, and I've stopped doing that to myself because I just don't like IPAs. This is brewed and canned by the Martin House Brewery Company, Fort Worth, Texas. It is called the Sweet and Sour Plum. It is sour plum beer with lactose.
Dude, what is up with you and like all these fruit beers?
Because this
man.
Just seemed and this seemed like a kind of a wild subject today, and so I thought I'm gonna go for this.
So you don't do IPAs, but you're doing that?
Yeah. Well, you know, IPAs were marked off my list a little bit ago because I just couldn't find one that I really liked. And so now I'm doing this, and this will probably be marked off my list next.
Wow.
No more sour plum beers.
All right, so listen, we're talking about an issue that we've been trying to figure out how to do an episode on for a while. It's about marijuana, medical marijuana, recreational marijuana, et cetera. The legislature in Texas reconvenes in January. Guarantee you there will be bills on this, on how to expand medical marijuana at least. And there's always some bill to try to legalize recreational. It usually has.
Well, even before we get to the next legislative session here in the midterms, this is going to be an issue. It already is because, they're at the very top race for governor. You've got Beto O'Rourke on the Democratic side saying it's time to legalize it. You know, we can stop locking people up for this. We can make money off of this. A lot of other states have, kind of gone that way as well. Even Governor Abbott, who, is very conservative, came out and said, well, maybe prison and jail is a place for just dangerous criminals, not necessarily for people who have small possession of marijuana. That's a little bit of movement, it seems like, there with this issue. This is going to be an issue in this governor's race.
It is. And Republicans, have we seen in the last 5 to 6 years, especially, they've really led on criminal justice reform. That's another issue, but this is part of that. Nevertheless, we started seeing all this news coverage about what's happening to our neighbors in the north of us in Oklahoma, right across the Red River. They have just exploded with medical marijuana up there. Now, they have medical marijuana. We have it here. Theirs is vastly different. I think we only have 6 or 7 reasons why someone in Texas can use medical marijuana up there. Mm-hmm. If you get a doctor's note saying, hey, you can try it, game on, because they have 8,300 grow operations, I think a little more than that right now. And 1 in 10 Oklahomans has a medical marijuana card. Think about that, Wheeler. 1 in 10. There's not 1 in 10 Texans who have a fishing license, I would bet.
and so a lot of people up there are using, and 1 in 10 sounds like a lot, using for medical purposes. But we're being told now, Jason, that it's more than 1 in 10. That, it's understood that some of those people who've got that license are buying for someone else in their life as well, who needs it but doesn't necessarily have the license. And, you know, that sounds like a lot of people, but they're making far more than that there. They're growing far more than that there. And, you know, we've got a lawmaker who is has been one of the leading proponents pushing this industry forward in Oklahoma. And he says, yeah, you know, we've got a lot of buttoning up to do here as well with rules and regulations, because a lot of this stuff is getting exported out of Oklahoma, which is not supposed to happen, including, in his word, tons and tons of it here in Texas. It's being sent to Texas. Yeah, and
before we get to him, though, let's just kind of set the stage for you. If you don't follow Oklahoma politics, like me and probably a lot of Texans, Oklahoma is a lot more Republican than Texas is. It's hard to imagine, but Oklahoma is a lot more Republican. They have, you know, the governor's Republican, both U.S. senators are Republican. The legislature, dominated by Republicans. We think that the Texas legislature here has a lot of Republicans. Up there, the margins are far greater with Republicans than they are here. So we have, as you can imagine, a Republican on the line with us. His name is Representative Scott Fettgatter. He is a Republican who represents a large area between Tulsa and down towards the Texas border, including Henrietta, where Troy Aikman is from as well, too. This is a very Republican area that he represents, and he's joining us right now from his office at the Capitol.
Yeah, I want to start with, you know, before you got on here, you said that you never have used this stuff. You kind of, you know, have been roped into it, et cetera. Did you ever dream, you know, being a conservative lawmaker in Oklahoma, that you would be on the forefront of pushing marijuana policy?
No, I'll tell you a funny story, I guess, that kind of sums it all up. My family, when they see news reporters doing all these stories on me, you know, and marijuana, They think it's about the most funniest thing they've ever seen in the world, because they all know how staunchly opposed to the use of marijuana I was, you know, for my entire adult life. Now, you know, I didn't say I had never used it. I tried it when I was a kid, and I never liked it. And as you can tell by the hair, you know, I'm a musician. I've played music, you know, most of my life. So I've been around a lot of people that did use marijuana, and I would get frustrated, you know, because, you know, band practice would, you know, they wouldn't show up, or, you know, they were always late or whatever. And that may just be musicians in general for the most part, but, you know, I have seen, you know, the negative effects of people who abuse marijuana, just like they would abuse any other type of, drug or food or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm. For our listeners here too, can't see the Zoom that we're on. Representative Fettgatter has shoulder length hair, I would say. Am I going too far there for you?
Yeah, it's longer than all my other colleagues.
You probably have the longest hair of any Republican in the state legislature, I would guess.
I probably do.
But let me ask you this. Everyone that I'm hearing from on this, and everything that I'm reading, shows that Republicans think that, oh, we need to start reining this in just a tad. This has gotten way out of hand since it was passed in 2018. You're looking the other direction, saying, hey, we need to expand this and make it recreational use as well. How's that sitting in the Republican caucus there in the state legislature?
Well, actually, if you really take a look at all the legislation that I have filed for this session, and actually have filed for the past 3.5 years on this issue, it's a combination. You know, we conservatives, for example, when we talk about gun policy, we talk about the more restrictions you put on guns, you know, the more you hurt law-abiding citizens, and criminals don't care what kind of laws you put or regulations you put on firearms. Well, marijuana is not unlike that same situation. In the state of Oklahoma, it's legal to have a marijuana business. You can have a grow operation. You can have a dispensary. You can have a testing lab. You can have, you know, a processing facility. or you can have all three of those. Mine, and you can't have those three with a testing lab. You can't. That's a conflict of interest. So the way I look at it is, if you look at my legislation, I actually have a bill also that changes the structure in which we license people and requires a lot more information. It's a lot more intense. It starts with a temporary license, then goes to a permanent license if you meet all the qualifications. So the more information you get, the better opportunity you have to stop criminal activity. With that being said, the more access people have, the less criminal activity you have. And so I related a lot to, this is our generation's prohibition on alcohol. Over 80 years ago, I'm sure state legislators were sitting around, and I bet some of them had long hair back then too. But over 80 years ago, legislators were sitting around and they were having these same exact discussions about alcohol. You know, alcohol used to be considered a medication. It just became mainstream, adult use. And the number one issue that I have, the number one single issue I have voted on in the state legislature over the past 6 years is alcohol. And we're 80 plus years into ending prohibition on alcohol. So marijuana is going to be something that is going to, potentially take another 80 years to get it all figured out. And what I try to explain to activists is, you can't have everything all at once. And the reason why Republicans in Oklahoma are saying we need to rein this in is because we have a lot of illegal activity going on. We have foreign investors that have come in and bought up land at, really expensive amounts of money, and drove the land prices up, and it's a bubble. And now they're starting. In fact, I spoke to a gentleman just this last week who was telling me about a piece of land that I was looking at buying a couple of years ago, and some marijuana folks come in and bought it, and they never even got their facility built out. They were foreign investors, never got it built out. But because of the laws we've been able to pass over the few years, we're catching up to those people that are wanting to do this, and supply illegal marijuana out of state.
So you've been a big proponent of this, and no doubt you've probably, had to convince some of your colleagues there in the legislature about the benefits of doing this. What would you say to, Governor Greg Abbott down here in Texas, who we're sure listens to this podcast, because, he's in the middle of a race now. And on the Democratic side, you've got former Congressman Beto O'Rourke, who says he's ready to legalize here in Texas to fully legalize. But Greg Abbott hasn't gone nearly so far. Is there a message that you would give to Texas Republicans on this?
Well, I would say, to Republicans all across the country, that Republican, conservative Republicans, they utilize marijuana just like anybody else does. When you look at the state of Oklahoma, 10% of our population has a medical marijuana card. That means 10% of our population went to a doctor, went to OMMA, and paid the fee to get a medical marijuana card. And when you look at it anecdotally speaking, I would say that 2 to 3 people are using those cards. They're buying for their friends or other family members who haven't gotten a card. And so there's a large population. And as we all know, Oklahoma touts that we're the reddest state in the union. And I don't even know that that's something that can be disputed. So one of my precincts in the state of Oklahoma, one of my most conservative red precincts on state question 788, voted 93% in favor to legalize medical marijuana.
Wow.
And that is the largest group of conservatives in my district.
And that state question for our listeners in Texas, that was the ballot initiative that legalizes back in 2018. Representative, I don't want to get you sideways with the governor, but I was reading an article that the governor of Oklahoma said earlier this month that voters were misled when they overwhelmingly approved this in 2018. Do you think they were misled?
Well, I think they were somewhat. The voters didn't understand the influx and the popularity and the lackadaisical laws that were wrapped up in the state question. And so they weren't misled in marijuana can be used medically. Okay. They weren't misled that way. They were misled in the fact that the state only had 60 days to stand up a brand new agency. The state had such a free market that, you know, anybody who had $2,500, hadn't had a felony in 2 years and was a 2 year resident could go get a license to grow or sell or process marijuana. They didn't understand that by putting a residency clause in there, that it was going to create this massive amount of illegal activity through straw men business models. Those are the things I think that the governor really is talking about. He doesn't maybe necessarily understand why Oklahomans were misled or feel misled, but at a granular level, but he does understand that there's a big problem. And I brought him to my office to discuss that with him. But I do want to make this point. Oklahomans weren't misled that they were legalizing marijuana.
Well, let me ask you this. How much buyer's remorse is there now? Because I'm seeing there's all types of legislation right now in the Republican-dominated legislature. Among them is a potential moratorium on any new dispensaries out there and grow operations. Is there buyer's remorse right now?
I can just, tell you when I'm back home, when I got involved with this issue, just before the state question passed, I knew it was going to pass. I was in my forums and my town halls. I mean, it was highly popular. I knew this thing was going to pass. So I started, putting my personal feelings aside and trying to understand what we were getting ready to run into. And I saw the flaws, and I actually voted against the state question whenever it was on the ballot. I didn't get involved in campaigning against it because I didn't feel like I should do that. People needed to make their own decisions. But with that being said, I'm so sorry. I kind of got sidetracked there. What was the actual question?
Well, you said you voted against it. Let me jump back to the small town you mentioned there in your district, which is just south of Tulsa.
Right.
It's a red area. You said 93% of the people voted for it. Why did so many Republicans want this to pass 4 years ago?
Well, and now I remember your question. So the buyer's remorse, we'll address both of those. Why people wanted it, I just think that, for Republicans, it's a couple of different things, okay? One is many Republicans have used marijuana for decades, and so they see no problems with using marijuana. We've seen that over the years, since the war on drugs, back in the 80s when I was a kid, we've seen that hasn't worked. I mean, if we're honest with ourselves, that has really not had any effect. But buyer's remorse. So I can't answer exactly why Republicans do. But I will tell you that some Republicans look at this as a liberty and freedom issue, that you should have the right to utilize marijuana if you so choose, and you certainly shouldn't get between a doctor and a patient got a potential opportunity. Look, I really learned a lot about marijuana. I've seen the Parkinson's patient who gets relief from the symptoms from having that disease. Arthritis. I mean, there's a lot of ladies and gentlemen in your churches that have really bad arthritis. And, somebody brought them some THC infused pain cream And all of a sudden, they've got relief now from those symptoms in that disease. So Republicans look at it as a freedom, liberty issue, not getting between you and your doctor. And then some just think, you know, it really does. It's not any worse than alcohol. Mm. I mean, that's how some of them feel. With that being said, buyer's remorse, when I go to my local cafes, when I go to town hall meetings, pretty much anywhere I go, I mean, it was a little nerve wracking, right, as a Republican to really jump out there in front on this issue whenever the state question passed. I was a little nervous about it and thought, man, my constituents are going to just think I'm a big pothead, you know. And so I was a little bit nervous about it, but somebody had to do it. You know, the state question was passed. The voters obviously wanted it. So somebody had to jump out there, and I got involved and I jumped out there. And now my constituents know that I support legal marijuana businesses 100%, no differently than I support, you know, the local grocery store, the local restaurant, you know, whoever it may be. If in the state of Oklahoma, if, you know, with legalized marijuana, if you want to invest and take the risk of starting into this, you know, new industry, then you should have the same opportunities to be successful and make a profit as any other business, in my opinion.
So you, since we're talking about business here now too, you've talked about how this has benefited a lot of people who needed the help medically. How has this benefited the state, this industry? How has it benefited the state, and how much potential is there still left to go?
I really wish I could get my colleagues to sit down with the right mindset and have a conversation about the future of marijuana. How has it benefited the state? Really, that, you know, it brings in, I think it brought in about $154 million or something last year. When you look at that in the grand scheme of the budget and the way the dollars were apportioned based on the state question, you know, it's helpful. But when you're looking at a $9 billion budget, which Texas is much, much larger than that, you know, $150 million does not change the game, I guess you might say, as far as state budgeting is concerned. We were last year, we did put, I believe it was $53 million directly into education through the Bread Bud Fund. And that was how the state question was written, that all the money came to the legislature to be, you know, appropriated to the agency for all of their needs. And then anything that was left go to education and substance abuse rehabilitation. So, you know, so far the agency has absorbed the mass majority of that money. But we did put some money into education last year, which is always helpful whenever you can find those extra dollars. Now, let's talk about the future of marijuana. I don't know why it is, but everybody in the world seems to want marijuana from Oklahoma. They love Oklahoma grown marijuana for whatever the reason may be. I have no idea. You know, as part of our problems, we're probably supplying, you know, a third to a half of the illegal marijuana all across the eastern part of the country, just through illegal businesses. People, you know, tell me all the time, well, you know, Representative Fettgetter, we don't want to be number one in marijuana. You know, there's a lot of other things we would like to be top 10 in, you know, as the governor says, we want to be a top 10 state. You know, when you look at marijuana and you look at the future, marijuana will never be illegal again, ever. You know, so everybody else might as well get on board and understand that marijuana in the United States of America will never, ever be illegal again. Therefore, there's an industry growing there, and it's going to be a national industry. It's going to be a worldwide industry. And Oklahoma, because of the reputation, for whatever the reason is, has an opportunity that if we would set this whole program up right, business owners in Oklahoma could really stand to do well, as the federal government decriminalizes, as they bring on the Safe Banking Act and those types of things. Hmm.
You said, I want to make sure I understood you right. You think that Oklahoma marijuana is supplying a third of all the illicit marijuana sales in the eastern part of the U.S.?
I think that that's probably a pretty accurate statement. It's all anecdotal, but, you know, when wow. you consider the number of grow operations in the state of Oklahoma, I mean, it's massive.
How does that much slip out, do you think? I mean, there are controls in place. How does that much slip away?
Well, no, that's where you miss it. The bureaucracy, OMMA, has been an utter failure on this program. OMMA in the state question was originally set up as part of the Department of Health. They became a stepchild to that agency, in my opinion. They weren't receiving the attention they needed. We had a recall on some product that was on the shelves. It took OMMA 5 days to get approval to put out a notice. Well, that marijuana has already been used in 5 days. Fortunately, the person who grew or was selling it put a recall notice out themselves. Mm-hmm. Last session when we came in, OMA for 13,000 marijuana businesses had 24 inspectors.
Wow. And reminder to our
state.
Yeah. Reminder to our listeners, OMMA or OMMA, what's the other way to pronounce?
OMMA is the Oklahoma Medical Marijuana Authority.
Right. And I think there's a bill in the legislature right now to make it its own agency outside the Department of Health, which would maybe alleviate some of the things.
And hopefully hire a few people. 13 inspectors for thousands of facilities across a whole state?
Yeah. So what we did was John Echols, our floor leader in the House, and myself, we've advocated since day one that OMMA, that this was too big to be a sub-agency of the Department of Health. It needed to be a standalone agency. Well, the governor fought against us. The Senate fought against us, said that looks like an expansion of government. Well, I mean, the AC already exists. I mean, you're just moving them out from one area to another. And be reminded, there's a new a business, new industry in the state of Oklahoma that if you don't regulate it, you're going to have big problems. So that's where we're at. Now, to your point, last session, I got fed up because we were on our third director in 2.5 years at the Oklahoma Medical Marijuana Authority. Jeez. We had 24 inspectors out there. In fact, the first year of legalization, I personally became the call center for OMMA because no one could get a hold of them, and I could. And I literally spent an entire summer sitting out under a big oak tree at a picnic table, just fielding calls from marijuana patients and businesses. So that's how I really learned so much about it, you know, was over that summer. But last year I came into session and I brought the director of the Oklahoma Medical Marijuana Authority into my office. And I said, you have a choice to make. You can either work with me or you can work against me, but I'm going to win. I'm going to mandate that you hire as many employees as is needed to get all these inspections done. We're tired of fooling around with it. We've heard the excuses. It's time to get it fixed. And I wasn't trying to be mean. I was giving her an option. You can either work with me and tell me what you think you need, or you can just let me grab a number out of the air and mandate that you hire these people. And so we did last session. Worked with OMMA, and we did put the mandate in, and they had to hire 64 additional inspectors by December 1st of last year, which is a challenge, and they didn't quite hit that exact number. Mm. But with that being said, you know, they made a huge step in that direction. Mm. And so I told him, I said, as long as I know you're working at it, then, you know, I'm not going to raise the red flag on it. And we have now our fourth director, by the way.
Wow.
In 3.5 years. Jeez. For the OMMA. So that's some of the problems we've had.
Representative Fettgatter, the reason we gave you a call too, we were curious about your House Bill 3754, which is another piece of legislation in regards to this. This is the one that would essentially make recreational use of marijuana legal for adults. I looked up a moment ago and saw that it's been referred to the Rules Committee just a week or so ago. What kind of support is there for? Is there an appetite for it, or does it go to Rules to die? Give us an idea where things are on this.
Well, the good thing about Rules is it can go there to die, or it can go there to be alive. Mm-hmm. That committee is an interesting committee. I'm sure it was referred to Rules to go there just to sit.
What do you think is going to happen with this? What's going to happen with this? Is there support to get this thing passed? Yeah.
No, there's not at all. And it's travesty that the legislature won't take the steps to move in this direction. We have two state questions back on the ballot or in the process of being put on the ballot for recreational marijuana. One of them is a constitutional amendment. The other is statutory. We also have an additional medical marijuana petition being circulated out there with a potential one to two more recreational petitions coming. So to me, the legislature will be a failure if we don't address this problem. And we should have learned the lesson from state question 788, that we need to manage this program and not be afraid of our own shadow because some people have buyer's remorse or are concerned with it. We, as the legislature, have been elected to come up here and represent our districts. And marijuana is legal in the state of Oklahoma. Mm. And it's really recreational for all intents and purposes at this point. So let's call it what it is. Let's take the mask off of the program, call it what it is. And then let's also come back after we legalize and put together a real medical program where physicians would like to take a look at it potentially, and universities would like to potentially start to do research and learn more about the cannabis plan. Hmm. You know, a lot of time, obviously today, all we've talked about marijuana, but when you look at the cannabis plan in general, you know, whether it's hemp or marijuana, mm-hmm. you know, it's only a percentage of THC that separates the two. It's the same exact plan. And when you look at CBD or hemp, for example, you have Delta 8, Delta 10 extraction going on out there that is pure THC. Mm-hmm. And it will get you high. And it's federally legal. I could go set up mm-hmm. a website right now and legally sell that. But because we don't have enough people interested in diving into this subject to understand it at the granular level, you know, we're just scared to pass recreational mm-hmm. marijuana, and we're going to let it get put on the ballot. We're going to end up in the same type of mess we're in now, potentially constitutionally, where we have no say in it at all, and everything goes back to other people every year.
Well, maybe you're going to have to get more of those lawmakers to sit out at that picnic table under the oak tree with you and get as educated as you've become on this. It's very granular. I want to ask you this, Representative. Here in Texas, Republicans have been very reluctant to relax some of the rules regarding THC and medical marijuana. It's a very specific list of ailments that qualify for this. It is a very weak form of THC compared to the concentrations that, you know, you're able to get in Oklahoma. You mentioned the East Coast. I'm curious if somebody is, you know, taking this, you know, much weaker stuff here in Texas, and Oklahoma is right there, and they probably know someone who lives in Oklahoma. How much of that's ending up in Texas?
How much marijuana from Oklahoma is ending up in Texas?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tons. It's a lot. I mean, I literally get phone calls and text messages and emails weekly from different marijuana companies that say, hey, you know, I can't compete because of the illegal market. And by the way, I know this group over here, here's the name of their company, here's their address. They're selling everything they have, you know, in Brooklyn, or they're selling everything they have in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I'm sure that anecdotally speaking, again, you know, Oklahoma could potentially be supplying more marijuana to Texas than Mexico.
Wow. And you don't have to mule it across through the Rio Grande. You can drive it down the freeway.
Yeah. It's they drive down the road. And I literally got a text yesterday from a buddy of mine lives right across from a 40-acre grow. And he said, the U-Haul van just pulled up again, you know.
So it's coming across the Red River more than the Rio Grande. That's stunning.
That's anecdotally speaking, but it would not surprise me at all. Look, we have 9,000 marijuana grows in the state of Oklahoma. 9,000.
It's more than
grows.
California, isn't it? Y'all are number one in that.
It's more than any. I think it's more than any state. All the states combined.
So you're number one again.
So you're number one. And that I failed to say that when my colleagues tell me, look, representative, we don't want to be number one in marijuana. I tell them all the time, that ship sailed.
And it's full of cargo.
Yeah, exactly.
So, representative, the last thing I have for you is if lawmakers in Texas do decide to do this, if they do decide to relax those rules and to go further into this like Oklahoma has, Oklahoma's been doing this for less time than Texas has. If they do that, it sounds like it's a cautionary tale, what's gone on there in Oklahoma, that you've got to get the infrastructure, you've got to get the rules and the regulations in place before you set people loose.
That's 100% correct. I will tell you, I would extend a personal invitation to any Republican or Democrat or whoever, the governor, Governor Abbott, whoever, in the state of Texas that would like to spend hours with me talking through marijuana, I will do it. And here's why. Marijuana will never, ever again be illegal in the United States of America. It's only going to become less legal over the next few years. So there really is a need for legislators to understand how this industry works. I still learn something new every week about the marijuana industry, but I know enough at this point to be able to help with how you regulate it and keep out as many of the bad actors as possible. Look, you know, prohibition again was 80 something years ago. Mm-hmm. We still have illegal alcohol on the market. You know, you're never going to completely rid, you know, the black market, but there are things that you can do to reduce that black market. And part of that equation is more access. So I would extend an invitation to anybody in the Texas state legislature that I'm happy to have this discussion with them.
Representative Fettgatter, you've been generous with your time. We know the legislature's in session there, so we appreciate you joining us for Yolitics here. We'll let you get back to your legislative duties now.
All right. Well, I appreciate you guys having me on, and reach out anytime.
Thanks, Representative. And we hope you all can get that phone unstuck from all those books now with all that tape.
I'll figure it out.
So Representative Scott Fettgatter there from Oklahoma. And, you know, the comment I made there at the end, he did this amazing job of stacking up. It looked like law books and then taping his iPhone to those law books so that he could deliver us a great shot on Zoom. It's one of the prettier shots I've seen. I can't imagine what that looked like behind the scenes. There was a lot of scotch tape involved. So hopefully he is able to free that phone after doing all of that. But wow, some strong stuff there coming from the representative in Oklahoma. Yeah.
How convincing is that for Texas Republicans? I don't know. I mean, clearly Oklahoma is paying for its program and putting money into the education budget over there too. But he made some good points that Republicans in Oklahoma, which is a much more Republican state than Texas, they see marijuana as a freedom and liberty issue. They also see it as a doctor-patient issue, some of the same things we're seeing with COVID. I was fascinated to hear him say that there's that much marijuana coming across the Red River to the north than potentially coming across from Mexico from the Rio Grande. I don't know if that's, you know, legit or not. I would say there's quite a bit coming from Mexico, but still, it's very interesting. At the end of the day, they do need to put some more controls there, it sounds like. If they have 8,300 plus grow operations and only, what, 60, 70, 80 total inspectors? Come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. They're definitely going to have to beef that up. And again, that cautionary tale for any other states who are interested in doing this. So another perspective in this, though, we've got on the line with us here today, Kim Moore, and she's got an interesting perspective on this because she has been a part of this burgeoning industry since the very early days when this was passed in 2018. And it's always great, I think, Jason, to hear from someone who is actually on the ground. We know that the representative has that 30,000 foot view. It does sound like he gets in there and gets very granular, though, and knows a lot of what's going on. But to truly understand what's going on, I think it's always great to talk to somebody who is down in it at the retail level, almost dealing with people who are actually, you know, coming in and asking for this prescription to be filled.
Walk us through what Oklahoma has been like unrolling this thing, because it's a red state, super red state, mm-hmm. and yet there's, what, 8,300 different growers there, whereas California has a lot less than that, is that right? Or dispensaries?
We have a lot. I believe currently we've got about 2,600 to 3,000 licensed dispensaries alone, and Lord, a number of grows and processors. So it's definitely thriving.
Let me ask you this. How in the world did this happen in a red state like Oklahoma?
The stars aligned and it all came together. And a gentleman named Frank Grove and some other folks wrote a really, really wonderful ballot initiative. And I don't know if you know the history of it before, but it had previously failed and they were able to get it back on the ballot. And they made it really patient friendly, whereas a lot of states, you know, you pretty much have to be dying to qualify for a card. And then once you get the card, product is really hard to come by. So they started out with a really great ballot initiative. It's very patient friendly, very common sense. And that got the ball rolling.
Now, the card that you talk about there, I can go get one of these cards that says that, you know, essentially I can get a prescription for medical marijuana if I just go to a doctor and say, hey, you know, I'm having this trouble and that trouble. And the doctor says, yeah, you know what? You might benefit from medical marijuana. Very different from what we see in the state of Texas, where there is also medical marijuana, but it is a very tightly controlled program. And there's such a specific list of different maladies that you can have to qualify for that. You don't have that in Oklahoma. So I want to ask this. You guys have so many growers there, though, and so many dispensaries there. Is that just going to the people who have the medical marijuana cards? It seems like a lot of product. Is it just going to them, or where does the rest go?
Jason's curious for himself here, too, whether he should get on the freeway and drive up there.
I'm asking for a friend on the podcast here.
I know. If I have my figures right, I believe we have over 300,000 something licensed patients. So a lot of it does go to the patients, but we can't be naive here. We know folks who don't have licenses are being served. And we do need a seed to sell tracking and a little more oversight from OMMA, which this new admin in OMMA is really jumping on that and really respecting the rights of the patient, yet, you know, taming down the program a bit. But as an Oklahoma resident, you can get a card. As you mentioned, there's no qualifying conditions. So you, as a reasonable adult, you feel cannabis is going to help you. The doctor agrees. He'll sign off on your form. And then there is a second level of approval from the state. They have to review your application. Then they'll say yes or no. It would have to be something really egregious to be denied. I believe you're not who you say you are or something like that, mm-hmm. to be denied an application.
But everything that I'm hearing and what you just said also is that even medical marijuana proponents think there needs to be more regulation in this market. What else needs to be done to tighten things up?
That is a major, the regulation actually going out, checking grows, checking dispensaries. Most people are doing things on the up and up, but there are some who aren't. And there are some, there's always going to be loopholes. So speaking to people in the industry who are, you know, doing this every day, working with growers, working with patients, working with processors, speaking with folks like us, finding out those loopholes and closing those loopholes, I think would be a major, major advancement. There's a lot of issue in the news right now about illegal grows in Oklahoma, and there's a lot of laws coming up on the in the legislature this session to handle some of that. I think some of them are smart, some aren't.
What are the loopholes you were talking about, Kim?
For instance, say you have a grow, and whatever size this grow is, let's say they have 12,000 square feet, 6,000 plants, however many they have. These plants go from little seedlings to teenagers to adults, then it's time to harvest. And there are different seed to sale tracking software where you're putting in your weights each step of the way. But once it's harvested, someone could, you know, help themselves to a few pounds of that, go sell it on the black market and say, well, these few plants, they died, you know, so we're going to count that off as waste. The rest goes into the seed to sale, and they've just profited, you know, however much money they made for those several pounds on the black market.
I'd like to know a little bit about the money in this, because you're down in it. You've been in the middle of it since the get-go here. This all just started up in 2018 there in Oklahoma. What was that like? Because as someone who's sort of reading over some of the facts and figures from afar, it sounds like it was just like Wild West, gold rush, people, you know, jumping into this industry. Is that what it has felt like?
You know, it's felt a bit like that. The barrier to get in, the barrier of entry was quite low, $2,500. And I know folks hear that amount and they're like, well, anybody could get in. But that's really not that. That'll get your license. But then you're looking at several hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions more, to actually get your operation going. That being said, there were a lot of people who'd been waiting for this for a long time and were ready to jump in, and the patients really responded. So it kind of felt like the wild, wild west, but it was a controlled chaos, I'll say that.
The state has made a lot of money off of it, though, too, hasn't it?
Oh, yes. Yes. So,
yeah.
The state has done very well.
Do you think that other states are kind of looking to Oklahoma and seeing that, hey, you know, this could be a big money maker? Do you think that Oklahoma is a model for other places? Have you talked to people from other places who've like tried to pick your brain?
A few. And I know a lot of folks do hope that their state looks to Oklahoma for their structure, infrastructure. And I hope they do as well, because it's a really great program. My focus from day one has always been on the patient. I have the advantage of seeing people come in at their very worst. They've got cancer, they've got neuropathy, they are getting off of illicit drugs, they're trying to get off of prescription drugs, any number of severe anxiety, so many different conditions. Are there people who just want to get high? Of course, God bless them. But most people are treating a condition. So I see these folks come in at their worst. We help them get a card, direct them toward products that are going to help them. You see them in a few months and they have actual joy and peace on their face, in their aura. So I think that folks should definitely follow this Oklahoma's plan, because I know folks from other states who really could benefit from a card, but they can't get one.
Kim, how many of you signed up since you started working on this? And you mentioned kind of the worst case scenarios. How many folks just come in like Wheeler, you know, might say, I just have a headache and my doctor gave me this. How many are like that? How many total have you signed up, and how many people are not worst case scenario?
Oh, gosh, thousands. I don't have an exact number, but I've served a lot of folks. And as far as that percentage, I would say maybe 30%. Just kind of thinking back over the past few years, mostly folks who would fit into that category can't sleep.
You're talking to one here. Wheeler cannot sleep. He sends emails at like 2 exactly. and 3 in the morning all the time.
So you've seen this really change people's lives, though, for the better, and help them in a lot of ways where they couldn't get relief before. Have you seen downsides in society? Because I think a lot of states, before they go to this, you hear that, you know, it's going to be the end of the world. You know, if you start loosening these restrictions, it's going to be the end of the world. Have you seen some downside in society?
The only downside, I suppose, would be the theft. Dispensaries getting, you know, held up at gunpoint. Folks getting held up at gunpoint. The some riffraff at the grows. I don't think it's as prevalent as we're reading about, at least from my experiences. And I do know quite a few people in the industry, but there is that aspect. But just like any other industry, you look at Amazon vans driving all over the state and they get held up all the time. So I don't think it's inherent to cannabis. I think it's inherent to opportunity and crime.
Mm-hmm. Is there, do you hear a lot of push on the ground to go for full decriminalization of marijuana in Oklahoma? Is that something that you hear rumblings about?
From the patient perspective, a lot of patients would be very happy with that. When people come sign up for licenses, they often talk about it and they say, oh, I hope, you know, it goes rec or it's decriminalized. And as far as, you know, any kind of governmental institution, I haven't heard a lot about it. I would imagine they probably wouldn't like it too, because they're raking in a lot of money from this. Mm-hmm. But from the people on the ground, yeah, they definitely would like. If it'll pass the ballot initiative, I don't know. I think there's a couple of bills in the legislature this session to at least decriminalize in Oklahoma. If it does, I hope they do still keep the medical program. I don't know how Oklahoma would handle it, but states like Nevada, where they've gone rec and previously had a medical program, there are some differences. The medical patients, you can get the higher THCs, you can purchase more product, you taxes are less. I suppose Oklahoma, I don't know how they would handle it, but I would urge people to keep their medical cards just in case.
Kim, as you mentioned, the legislature is meeting right now, and there is a House bill in there that would make adult use of marijuana legal, which would be the recreational aspect of this. But there's also there are a lot of Republicans who are a little concerned that this whole thing has gotten away from Oklahoma and has moved too far down the road too fast, especially when you have states like Colorado and Washington and California saying, whoa, what's happening in Oklahoma? You guys are flying over here. Mm-hmm. What are you concerned about that the legislature might do? Because they can't roll this back. It's already enshrined in the state constitution, that 2018 ballot initiative. But what are you afraid of? What are people concerned about? Anything going on in the legislature now?
I'm afraid they can't roll it back, but I'm afraid they will put so many obstacles in the way that it will be death by a thousand prohibition cuts. That's what
I'm afraid. What kind of obstacles are you afraid of?
Such as one of the bills. There's so many marijuana bills in front of the legislature this month, but one of them is a moratorium on licenses. And I really don't think that does not benefit. I'll stop mitigating my responses. That does not benefit legitimate business owners. The illegal grows, they don't have licenses. They're going to do what they're going to do. Putting a moratorium on the license would stop Oklahoma businesses from being able to, you know, get into the industry and trickle on down, therefore stop patients, give patients less options, fewer options to go get product and, you know, things like that.
You mentioned just a little bit ago concentration of THC, and I think if we have listeners in Texas right now who are paying attention to what you're saying, it's a very different ballgame in Oklahoma than it is for here. If they're able to get medical marijuana here, they're looking at, and this was just approved, to where we went from 0.5% concentration of THC to 1% for medical marijuana. What are you all looking at there in comparison, and what kind of difference does that make?
Well, that's really super low. Our THC percentages, we're looking at on flower, you're looking at anywhere from a low end would be 13, 14, 15, under 20%, mid-range 20 to 26, 27 and higher, you're looking at a high THC for flower. Concentrates, low end would be 75% THC. Mm. You go all the way up to 94%, 97%.
Wow.
Same with edibles, you know, edibles going by milligrams, you know, you're looking at 150 average, you know. In Oklahoma, I find either patients want low milligrams or they want super high milligrams. It's like everything in between. There's a few people that want it, but yeah, that sounds super low.
So what's the difference then, Kim, if I am taking a product that has 1% THC in it versus one that has 60%?
If you're treating a condition that really should not have a high THC, you want the other cannabinoids to really become effective. CBD would be probably very beneficial. And that, you know, that would be a good therapeutic solution for you. But a lot of conditions, dementia, a lot of high pain, different things. Chronic pain is probably the biggest condition people come to us with. Those things require higher THC. RSO works really well for those folks that have got that deep-seated pain that, in my experiences, a lot of patients have had great success with that. That is a very high THC product. So I think a lot of people will miss out and think that, oh, well, there's nothing to this cannabis thing. It's not helping me, when the limits are hamstringing them.
Kim, before we let you go, you guys have had 4 years experience on this. Texas has barely got its toe in the water on the entire medical marijuana deal. What is your message to Texas lawmakers? Because like Oklahoma, Republicans run this state, not with as wide a margins as they do in Oklahoma. But what would you tell Texas lawmakers who will meet again in the legislature in January? What's your message to them about this?
I would tell them, look into your life. Is your mother with you? Do you have a parent with you? Do you have a grandparent with you who is suffering from a debilitating condition? They're in severe pain. What kind of help would you want them to get? What would you want that person, your mother, your grandmother, your father, to walk into a dispensary and be able to purchase to stop this chronic pain, something that's not being helped through prescription medication, that's not being helped through physical therapy or any other option? What would you want them to be able to purchase and direct your legislating, you know, accordingly?
I would just ask you, tagging on to the end of that, do you think that we're going to eventually see a model similar to what we're seeing in Oklahoma nationwide? I mean, nobody would have thought Oklahoma would be, you know, at the cutting edge of something like this. Do you see that this just kind of going across the country at some point where we really start seeing a loosening of restrictions?
I think it will eventually. I don't know how quickly. But I think it definitely will. Alcohol is legal. And in my opinion, alcohol is far, far more corrosive than cannabis. You know, people die every day. Somebody has a few drinks, gets in the car and, you know, gets in an accident and kills someone, or overdrinks and kills themselves, destroys their organs. Things like that it's not happening on cannabis. And so if alcohol is going to be legal, you know, cannabis should be legal as well. You should be able to, with regulation, of course, a consenting adult of age should be able to go into a dispensary and purchase this plant that can potentially help them.
Kim, thanks so much for the time. Good luck to you up there, too.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, so Wheeler, I learned a lot here. Not only are there riffraff of the groves there, as Kim just mentioned too, but a lot of the lingo I didn't know. Flower, concentrates, percentages, cannabinoids. I mean,
that's a 50 cent.
I heard
right
you
there.
Drop in malady a little earlier. I appreciated that. I like how you try to throw in a little vocabulary every so often too.
Every now and then I try to expand your vocabulary a little bit with mine.
She was laughing though at Texas when we told her about the Texas program set.
Yeah. And about the concentration of THC that's allowed down here. You know, an interesting thing to point out, though, you know, as we go through this, you know, we're always thinking about our audience in Texas. And the University of Texas and Texas Tribune actually did a poll back in June of last year. and asked, you know, when, you know, if should marijuana be legal? And 60% of respondents said that possession of a small amount or even large amounts ought to be allowed. 60%. And so you wonder, well, you know, then why hasn't, you know, the government here in Texas reacted accordingly? Well, then you get down into the party affiliation, and among Democrats, 73% say a small amount or any amount is okay. 73%. Among Republicans, 43% saying a small amount or any amount is okay. So that may be, you know, maybe some of these lawmakers are, you know, keeping an eye a little bit closer on those polls and seeing where their voters are. But, you know, it's an interesting question, you know, that when put to the people, you know, maybe they would decide something differently if they had the power to actually change the law. I thought that was staggering that the representative said that in his district, which is heavily, heavily Republican, 93% of people voted in favor of legalizing marijuana for medical purposes there.
The trend is clearly going towards legalization and expanding medical marijuana and potentially getting to recreational in Texas, you know. That
and Beto O'Rourke is banking on that in this gubernatorial run. We will see if that kind of a double down benefits
that's
him.
One of the issues, and we'll also see in November when bill filing opens for the January 2023 legislative session whether you know how many of these legalization type bills come up and whether any are authored by Republicans. Something to watch for there. But the end of the day.
And if they start to hear from farmers, here in Texas.
And a message for our Republican listeners on here, too, and Republican lawmakers. You know, Representative Pettgatter will host you if you want to make the drive north or fly in. We'll connect you with them, so shoot us an email.
So the sweet and sour plums beer, by the way, turned out to be very sour.
What did you expect? It's in the name, man. Come on.
It's like Sour Patch Kids were just dropped in there to marinate for a while. Very sour.
This chronic I have over here, man, is tough. The Stash IPA. I don't do a lot of IPAs, as you know. This is more your
brand. You do seem a little more mellow than usual.
It's dealing with the chronic pain of you all the time. That's what it is.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening once again. He really does love me, by the way. Be sure to subscribe while you're here. Tell your friends about this podcast as well. Get them signed up, the friends and family plan there. It is free for everybody, of course. Thanks for doing it with us again this week, everybody. We will talk to you again next week.